looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, MGM Springfield, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And a ground ball knocked down. Velasquez from the knee will recover and get him. And that's how the ball game comes to an end here this afternoon. Big smile. A lot of smiles on the Red Sox side. 9-3, the final score as the Red Sox split here in Seattle.
Dave O'Brien in Essen, we didn't need him to tell us. Red Sox split the four games with the Seattle Mariners over the weekend at Safeco Field. They won the first one, lost the next two, won the last one. Bookend victories, if that's what you want to call them. 617-779-0985 is your number. We've got a lot to get to from the weekend series. To me, there is a significant takeaway from that series. Okay, there is a significant takeaway, at least one that to me has been sort of developing here over the last, week. Yeah, more than that, really. Yeah, several weeks. Honestly, if you want to go back to when David Price started to get hot. But we'll touch on that in just a minute. But I've learned my lesson when it comes to my interaction here with you, the Red Sox fan. I've learned my lesson. See, so the Red Sox came off a four-game series with the Astros a few weekends back, and I came in on Monday and I told you, no, the weekend's not a success. That was the question, and we often do that. We present a big picture question for you at the beginning of the show. So the Astros are at the beginning of the week. The Astros series, was it a success or a failure? At the end of the day, you know what I told you? Neither. Neither. That's what I told you. But a lot of you wanted to deem it a success, and a lot of Red Sox fans got angry at me for that. They get annoyed that I somehow wouldn't give the Red Sox credit for splitting a four-game series with the Astros after they fell behind 2-0, and then they won the last two. So somehow that made me the bad guy. So I learned my lesson on Friday, Murray, and Jimmy Stewart, our producer. I got on the record as to what my expectations were for the series. Okay, I got on the record going in, and this was after the Red Sox won the first game of the series, which was on Thursday night, and that was the Price game. Obviously, Price pitched well. They won the game 2-1. So do you remember? We're going to replay it for you. Here's what I said on Friday evening about my expectations for the weekend series with the Mariners. I viewed it all in all as a kind of weekend with the Astros, and that irritated a lot of you. So let me just tell you now, while you're playing the Mariners, and it's a four-game weekend series on the road, I would tell you up front, and I will tell you ahead of time, a successful weekend for the Red Sox, to me, is winning 3 out of 4. Win 3 out of 4. Splitting with the Mariners? Not good enough. Okay, so again, I'm supposed to change my mind now, like all of a sudden this is a successful series?
No, but I'm surprised you think that this may prevent people from being all boo.
Okay. Well, no, it probably won't, Murray. You're probably right about that. Let's be realistic. People are going to be who they are. And you have a right to feel good about some things in this series if you're a Red Sox fan. I don't mean to diminish that part of it at all. I'm just not going to tell you it was this enormous success. But overall, we looked it up today. Okay? And Matt, our intern, also gave us some data that's bigger picture that relates to this. But let me begin by telling you this. Head-to-head this year, right now, the five playoff teams in the American League are clear. And I heard them talking about this in the game on Saturday, that really it's astonishing how little drama there is in the American League in the playoff races. Astonishingly little drama. To the point where really right now, we pretty much know who the playoff teams are going to be. I mean, it could always change. Don't get me wrong. There is certainly the possibility that someone comes out of the woodwork, somebody gets hot here in the second half. But Cleveland's going to win the Central. By default, I think, but Cleveland's going to win the Central. The Red Sox and Yankees are both going to get in. And in the West, it feels like Houston and Seattle, although, really, the gap now between the Mariners and the Angels is huge.
It's almost like 10 games,
isn't it? It is, yeah. It's 8 games between those two. And with Ohtani out of the mix, depending on how long that whole thing takes, I'm not sure the Angels can come back without him. So again, the five playoff teams are going to be, in all probability, New York, Seattle, Houston, Boston, and Cleveland. Head-to-head against one another this year, Cleveland's 5-12. And if you were to tell me you don't believe in the Indians, I'm with you. It feels to me like Cleveland has slipped. Okay, now the Red Sox haven't played the Indians yet, so I'd want to get a first-hand look at the Indians when they go head-to-head, because there are teams that don't play well until they're threatened or challenged. Maybe Cleveland is one of those teams, but they played the Yankees earlier in the year and got swept. So it feels to me like Cleveland has slipped. Again, 5-12 against the other playoff teams. The Red Sox are 7-7. Houston's 12-12. So those both of those clubs are 500. Seattle's 9-8. The Yankees are 11-5. Matt, our intern, looked it up. Typically, teams that do well in October beat good teams during the regular season. Okay, they have a successful resume or a high winning percentage against winning teams during the regular season. Those are the teams that generally do the best in October. The quote-unquote hot team that plays well in September, that doesn't really mean as much. But if during the year you beat good competition, when you get to October, your track record for success is pretty good. So against winning teams this year, according to Baseball Reference, Cleveland 12-16. Again, another reason to sort of discredit the Indians. And again, we'll make our final judgments later. The Red Sox 14-12. But Houston, Seattle, and New York all have played 600 or better. Houston 24-18, Seattle 19-13, and the Yankees against good competition 19-8. 19-8. So the Red Sox are no better than the middle of that list, and actually on that list they're fourth. Okay, now again, I'm not telling you how it's going to play out, because this could all change in a couple of weeks with the deadline coming up. These teams will add new players, the whole dynamic will change. But this series against the Mariners, to me, for it to be a really successful series, the Red Sox had to win 3 out of 4, especially after winning the opener. And then they lost the next two, and again, there were some really good signs from this series that I want to share with you in the next segment. In the interim, 617-779-0985, and it looks like Jamie on the Vineyard already wants to touch on one of the positive takeaways of this series with the Mariners. Jamie, what do you got?
Hey, Matt, what's going on? I'm just calling in about Erod. I know it typically that I'm not always a huge fan of him. Usually his knee's always, you know, hurting. Sometimes, he never gets past the fifth and sixth. He can get into the seventh and eighth a few times. I mean, what do you think about, you know, his potential and his future?
So, look, Jamie, I like what Eduardo Rodriguez has given the Red Sox this year. It's hard not to. And again, remember, there has always been an injury issue with this guy that seems to have popped up. He has not been consistently healthy and reliable, really, since they acquired him from the Orioles. He hasn't. Now, some of that was due to being young and inexperienced. Some of that was, again, due to knee issues and health issues, and it feels like he's finally got the knee thing under control. The Red Sox are 13-1 when Eduardo Rodriguez pitches. To me, he's one of the real bright spots. 13-1. Okay, so that's easy to like, and he himself is 9-1. So, to me, that's one of the real takeaways, is that Eduardo Rodriguez has established himself now, or feels like he has, as a reliable performer in the Red Sox rotation. And really, you could say the Red Sox rotation overall. I mean, when you look at it, Price pitched well. Porcello pitched well enough. Steven Wright pitched very well, and Eduardo Rodriguez pitched well. And then the only guy that didn't pitch in this series was Chris Sale. He goes next. So right now, it feels like the Red Sox had a nice little thing going with their rotation. And that is a good thing. There were other takeaways or other positive developments from the weekend. To me, that should mean a lot to you if you're a Red Sox fan. We'll do that when we come back.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
1-2. High fly ball, right field deep. That one way. All the way to the cafe. Rafael Devers destroyed it. And the Red Sox take a big lead early.
Big home run there for Rafael Devers yesterday. He was one of the good offensive performers in this series for the Red Sox, and it was a bomb, right? It was a bomb, that home run. Hit the face of the second deck. Absolute smash, and that is a big ballpark. That's a tough place to hit, at least for power. And Devers had three two-hit games in the series. Bogarts homered in three of the four games. David Price pitched well in the series opener. That was on Thursday night. Certainly, Eduardo Rodriguez in the finale yesterday gave the Red Sox six innings, 113 pitches, I think it was, again. But even so, went six innings. And to me, this is the real positive development and positive takeaway about the weekend. Like, you know, for the Red Sox to go in there and split, fine, we can debate, we can argue, whatever. But the key performers in the series for them, I mean, there wasn't a ton going on there with J.D. Martinez in this series. Right, this is when it was not a J.D. Martinez weekend. And you had two games in there, 2-1 and 1-0, that were largely decided by the pitching staffs. So that Saturday night game I want to get to in a minute, because that thing was I thought, terrific to watch. And mostly because of Wade LeBlanc, the left-hander of the Mariners. But we'll get to him in a second. But if you want the Red Sox to do big things this year, and obviously you do, the key guys, the guys you should really be rooting for or looking for, are not Betts and J.D. Martinez and Chris Sale. Maybe Sale in October. But those three guys really are a given. Martinez has made it clear at this stage that he's a legit hitter. J.D. Martinez is going to hit. And Mookie Betts is a superstar in the making. And Chris Sale, we all know what Chris Sale is. Those guys generally are consistent, high-level performers. It's the other guys that have the capability to perform at a high level that haven't done it consistently or because of injury or what have you that you should really look at. And if those guys peak out, or a majority of them do, well, then all of a sudden the whole thing changes. David Price is one of them. Again, the Red Sox have won his last seven outings. Price himself is 6-0 during that span. Eduardo Rodriguez, high upside there. You've been waiting for it for a long time. The Red Sox are 13-1 when Rodriguez pitches. He alone is 9-1. Devers, the average is up now to 239, and I always feel uncomfortable saying that like that's some sort of major achievement. But Devers, again, I felt coming into the year, Devers had 30 homer potential, maybe even 35, based on what we saw last year. And now the ball's starting to leave the ballpark. He's making contact a little more consistently. And the other one is Bogarts, who homered in three of the four games in this series. Of those four guys we just rattled off, and Price is probably the most important member of that group, but if the Red Sox get three out of four there, Price, Eduardo Rodriguez, Bogarts, and Devers, if they get three out of those four guys, they should be right there knocking on the door for the American League Championship with New York and Houston. They should be right there. Those are the guys that you should really be happy to see play well. Because the talent on the other guys, I don't think you're going to see any sort of prolonged slump from J.D. Martinez. I don't think you're going to see one from Mookie Betts. And I don't think you're going to see one from Chris Sale. Again, maybe late in the year. So we'll judge Sale then. With Sale, it's going to be about the big games, but we all know what his upside is. He's hit it a lot. Okay, he's hit it a lot. Now, as for the game on Friday night, the Red Sox played three games, so let's go all the way back to Friday night. Against James Paxton, they got a gift in the early middle part of that game where they got a 6-1 rally against Paxton. Seager made an error at third base. The Red Sox had opened up the floodgates in one inning and scored six runs. They were up 6-4 going into the eighth inning, which has been a problem. They haven't had an eighth-inning guy all year. And so let me ask you as a fan, this to me has been a consistent problem. As a fan, what is the area you want to see them address? I know what it is for Jim Murray, because Murray was actually on the air on Saturday, and he played this for you.
Matt Barnes! Heath Hembree! Ducks! Joe Kelly
and those other guys.
It's time to spin the wheel of gutless bums. Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high leverage situation late in the game? Now, let's spin the wheel.
Barnes.
And today's gutless bum is
Matt Barnes.
Long drive, and that's going to find a lot of grass. It's down into the corner, up against the wall. Romine is in. Gamble's trying to score. Here's the throw home. They will not get him. Spann coming off the bench, and he delivers a gigantic hit to put Seattle in the lead.
I mean, he's a good hitter. He's a veteran hitter. He's just going to put together a quality at bat. Got to execute pitches, and I left one little two up.
Yeah, he's right about that, and he's talking about Denard Spann, who hit a double off of Matt Barnes there, who was talking in the eighth inning. But he comes in, 6-5 lead, strikes the first guy out, and then the next guy, Maz, if you weren't up at 1 in the morning watching this, 4-pitch walk.
Ryan Healy.
Followed by a single, up comes Spann, who's a Red Sox killer, knocks in runs, and there you go. That's your game. You knew it, too. As soon as you saw that walk happen, if you were up watching this thing, you're like, oh, you stupid MF-er. But this was their best option. And now, you know, I was actually, you know, prior to the rotation looking as well as it has here in the last few weeks, I was like, maybe they got to add an arm in that rotation because I don't know how much I can trust some of these guys going forward. Are you really going to get Stephen Wright continuing to pitch as well as he has as a knuckleballer, Eduardo Rodriguez, so on and so forth? They have to do something about that eighth inning because you had Joe Kelly, who I still don't even trust in that situation, but Joe Kelly's been good. And then Craig Kimbrell gassed from the night before in the series opener on Thursday, so they're unavailable. So Alex Cora's best option there is Matt Barnes. Think about that. That's his best option when those other guys are gassed. They have to have another arm there for the eighth inning for this team to, you know, go on the run that we think that they're capable of in the postseason.
Oh, listen, Murray, the eighth inning's a major problem. Okay, the eighth inning is a major problem. And
because Barnes sucks. I mean, and again, on the road, high leverage situation, a lot of pressure there, one-run lead. That walk happens. If you've been watching this team and paying attention, you knew that it was all a matter of time before it imploded.
Yeah, it is. And I want to get to Barnes in particular, or, you know, because that four-pitch walk to Healy, I think the first three pitches were curveballs, which you look at and say, are you that scared of Ryan Healy that you're not going to throw a fastball when you're behind 2-0 in the count or even 1-0? Like, you're really that scared of that guy? And you know, beyond that, the Red Sox starters overall good, 3.62 ERA. That's third best in the league. Their pitching ranks second in the league overall. And even the bullpen this year, 3.03 ERA. That's third in the league. You would say that that's good. Here's the number that really bothers me. And this is the one that should bother you as a Red Sox fan. Their relievers, or I shouldn't even say that because I'm not. There's got to be a starter who went into the eighth inning this year, right? So, but in the eighth inning this year, the Red Sox have walked more batters than any other inning in the game. And this, to me, is exactly what the problem is.
So that's not just American League, it's MLB?
No, that's just Red Sox, you know, Red Sox first inning, second inning, third inning, just the Red Sox. They've walked more batters in the eighth than they have in any other inning.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and the reason
I thought it was comparing to the rest of the league.
No, just their own staff. In the eighth inning, they don't throw strikes like they normally do. And why is that? And that is because you're using your relievers in the eighth inning, and there are guys there who you put in pressure situations and can't throw strikes consistently, or can't throw quality strikes consistently. So if you were to go back and look, they had bad eighth inning in New York, they had a bad eighth inning in Houston, they had a bad eighth inning in Tampa to start the year. But let's focus on the playoff teams. Okay, New York, Houston, Seattle. On the road, eighth inning, relatively close game, what happens? Whether it's Barnes, whether it's Kelly, whether it is Carson Smith earlier in the year, all those guys, they all have the same problem. They can't throw strikes under pressure. It's an issue. It's an issue, and it's something, to me, that Dombrowski has to address at this deadline.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Bogarts with an opportunity for an RBI here. High fly ball, left center field. He leaned into this one. Back, and gone! Xander strikes again. His third home run in the series. And the Sox open it up here in Seattle.
Good weekend for Xander Bogaerts. Three home runs. I think that's what? Is that 12 now for Bogaerts?
I think he's up to 13.
Is it 13?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's, you know, he hit 10 all of last year. This is what you want. If Bogaerts can hover around 280, although I still think he's capable of hitting for an even higher average. But to me, Bogaerts should be around 290 with power. But that aside, I'm not going to blitz or quibble over it if it's 15 points. Like, that's really not that big a deal when you get right down to it. In a 1,000, you know, in 100 at-bats, the difference between 275 and 290 is 1.5 hits. Like, you know, what are we doing here? So if he's hitting for power and hitting in that 280 range, it's good enough. Okay, 275, it's good enough. I think he can even give you a little bit more. But I want to get to Bogaerts' base running, and it's not what you think it is in just a second. But first of all, we have an interesting call on the line. It says Edwin in Boston, and here's what he wants to talk about. I'm going to tell you before I bring him on. Casual baseball fan wants to know why Red Sox win division but can never win in the playoffs. So, Edwin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, guys.
So, I'm not. By the way, I'm not laughing at you. It's an excellent question. It's just, you know.
I get that.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, so my whole thing is, you know, I'm a huge Celtics fan, huge Patriots fan, Bruins, but I'm not really a baseball guy. But it kind of baffles me how every year we're able to win over 90 games, but come the first round of the playoffs, we get knocked out. Is it the pitching? Is it the coaching? Like, what is it? Like, I'm getting tired of every year, like, oh, the Red Sox are doing great, but everybody's like, yeah, don't worry about it. They're not going to make it past the first round.
Okay, so, Edwin, I'm going to let you go. You can take the answer off the air, okay? But it's a totally legitimate question. If you were to look at the last 2 years and say the Red Sox have gone 1-6 in the postseason, what is the number one reason for that? Starting pitching. Their starters have crapped out on them completely. I mean, I don't even know what the number is. I don't have it in front of me. But their ERA or their starting pitchers is something like 10 in the last two postseasons. It's horrendous. So starting pitching is number one. Okay, that's number one. The odd part of that is that it should be the strength of the team. They've invested a lot in Chris Sale in terms of the talent they traded to acquire him. They spent a ton of money for David Price. They traded for Drew Pomeranz. Eduardo Rodriguez, they got in a deadline deal a number of years ago. Now, as you get to the bottom, the prices are less. Porcello's $20 million a year. So they spent a lot of money there, a lot of resources on their starting pitching. That is the number one reason that they have not done well in the playoffs. Beyond that, let me ask you, Murray, and you, Jimmy Stewart. Is it that simple? Is it just the starting pitching, or is it more?
No, I mean, the offense dried up, too, especially when you had Hanley Ramirez as their best offensive player last year coming off the bench once Eduardo Nunez's knee blew out. No, it's just been, it's you're 100% right. The number one thing is the starting pitching, but then the offense has dried up the last couple of years, both against Cleveland and against Houston, so maybe there's just an overall tightness thing that's happened there, too.
Jimmy Stewart, is it just the starting pitching, or is it more?
No, it's a combination of everything, but they need playoff-proven performers. They needed to do what Houston did last year, and that's go get Justin Verlander, who's done it in the playoffs. The kid in Kansas City, Heredia, would be a perfect fit for the eighth inning. He's a guy who did it in the playoffs years ago on championship teams. They need playoff performance. That's what they need.
You mean the reliever Kelvin Herrera, right?
That's what I mean.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, and that's okay. It does feel like they haven't played to their, beyond the starting pitchers, they haven't played to their capability in the postseason.
They feel like the Oakland A's right now of the early 2000s. Good regular season team, and then when it comes playoff time, they got nothing.
Okay, so it has felt like that the last 2 years. Now, the starting pitching is number one on the list. I don't think there's any question about that. We'll see how it goes with the other spots. Maybe if they're in a game, some of these guys will actually come up big in some big spots. They haven't had a ton of big spots. They get their ass kicked a lot of these games because their starting pitching has been so bad. So to me, it starts there to answer the caller's question, but there are other elements. I want to go back to the weekend now. The game on Saturday was a 1-0 game, and Wade LeBlanc pitched for the Mariners. And let me just say, I thought this guy was a pleasure to watch. Like, there are nobody, there are very few pitchers in the game anymore that throw 88 to 90 miles an hour, that change speeds, you know, command the plate. They're up in the strike zone, down in the strike zone, left, right. In the case of LeBlanc, he was down consistently. But change speeds, throw breaking balls, great mix of pitches, throw them off of strikes and work fast. And that guy did it over the weekend. He's a journeyman. He's just the lightning in a bottle. He's nothing special. But when a guy like that pitches well, there's just, to me, there is really something to appreciate about a game like that versus a guy who throws 98 and just blows everybody away. The second thing is great theater, too. But this, what LeBlanc did on Saturday was downright artistic. Okay, I thought it was terrific. And in that game, at one point, Xander Bogaerts was up, hit a ground ball to the right side. We're going to play this for you here in just a minute. But he had a ground ball on the right side that D. Gordon made a play on. And it was a diving play. And he just got Bogaerts, who dove into first base head first. Okay, here's the play in the commentary from A.J. Pierzynski.
The 3-2. D. Gordon, shallow right. What a harpoon snare. Slide out at first. Gold glove, D. Gordon. What a play.
I never understood the slide into head first into first. I never got that, but if he runs, he might be, I think it's quicker, but I know it's hustle and you get that and you're doing this, but for me, if he runs through the base, he's easily safe.
Okay, so again, now this has always been a debate in baseball. Can you actually get to the bag faster by diving or are you faster running through? Alex Cora, I thought, had a great line over the weekend. He said, I never saw Carl Lewis dive at the finish line. Right? And he's right. He's right, because you have to actually expend energy to slow down and dive. So you just keep blasting right through. So that's number one. Number two is the injury factor. And so Peter Abraham of the Globe, I don't know if he does this every Monday. Maybe it's every Monday. Maybe it's occasionally on off days. I haven't been able to decipher the real schedule of it. But it's one of the Abraham does his beat reporter's notebook that they post online. To me, it's one of the best things he does. And he just touches on a bunch of different issues that maybe got overlooked. Here's what he wrote about Xander Bogaerts diving into first base. And I thought that this was revealing. And I want you to listen closely in particular to Bogaerts' comment. Okay, but Abraham writes, Cora is right to gently prod Xander Bogaerts into not sliding into first base. No manager should be draconian, and that is certainly not Cora's style. Okay, so Cora is trying to get Bogaerts to stop diving into first. Bogaerts keeps doing it. Okay, but he doesn't demand it or insist on it. Abraham continues. But Bogaerts is 25, old enough to understand how reckless that is. And then listen to this. It was surprising to find Bogaerts defiant about the idea on Sunday when I asked him about it. Defiant. Quote, it's been part of the game and it's part of what I do, Bogaerts said. If I feel like diving, I'll do it. Okay, now let me stop there. Doesn't it sound like Bogaerts is sensitive about this question?
Yeah.
Like, what's he getting his backup for?
He's been yelled at about this before.
Bogaerts seems sensitive about everything.
Okay, so the diving into first base is stupid. In fact, I would say diving in many cases is stupid. But if you want to say on tag plays that your hand allows you to, you know, circumvent a tag, you see it at second base all the time with the swim move on a stolen base or on a double off the wall, guys can get in there, fine, no problem. I get it. First base? Why do you have to slide into first base at all? And head first is a shoulder, hand, elbow, whatever. It's an injury waiting to happen with the way guys barrel down that line and then do it right at the end at the last minute. It's an injury waiting to happen. So Abraham continues. Bogaerts had a poor second half at the plate last season because of a hand injury that occurred when he was hit by a pitch. That can't be helped. But he can avoid the potential of hand injuries by not diving into first base. Bogaerts has the fourth highest WAR among Sox position players. Losing a player like that would be a huge blow. Cora has to find a way to make his point. Okay, now again, the diving into first base drives me bananas. Abraham couldn't be more right about this, and so could Cora. I want to know why Xander Bogaerts being such a pain in the ass about it. Honestly, I think diving into first is fake hustle. I do. I think it's fake hustle. It's an idea. It's a way to somehow show, you know, fans or teammates or whoever.
How bad I want it.
Yes, exactly. And the reality is, just run through the bag. Run through the bag. Bust a hump and get through the bag. On this play, on Saturday, Bogaerts was ultimately called out. I want to say it was in the fifth inning. And they had to review it, but he was out. And it could have been that it was inconclusive. And so they weren't able to reverse the call because they initially called him out on the play. But the continued diving into first, Bogaerts is having a good year. Like maybe his best all-around year so far, although in the beginning of 2016, he had, I thought he was dynamite, and then he faded in the second half. So let's see what happens this second half. But the guy's playing great right now, and he's hot, and he's diving into first base. Oh, God, I hate it. Hate it. Back to your calls. Frank's in Jersey. What do you got, Frank?
Hey, Matt, how you doing? I want to think outside the box with the Red Sox, a typical box of them needing a relief pitcher, which they definitely do. But hear me out on this. You just said to the previous caller that that the Red Sox starting pitching was the number one reason for them going 1-6 in the postseason the last couple of years. So if that's the case, then why aren't we talking more about their need, and hear me out on this, their need for a number two starting pitcher? You look back to last year, their rotation in the playoffs was Sale. It was Pomerantz, Doug Fister, obviously no longer with them, and you had Rick Porcello for game four. You had Rodriguez and Price on the roster, and they chose not to pitch them as starters. So why are we not talking more about that their rotation in last year's postseason was basically the same guys minus Fister, get a number two, all right, and then you move, you have Sale, a number two who we have to identify, Porcello, Rodriguez. You know Price is not going to get it done in the postseason. I know you can say, well, maybe he does, or he finally does. We can't rely on that. You move him to the bullpen where he's been great in the postseason. You put Pomerantz, if he's healthy, in the bullpen, and he's proven to be a reliable reliever. You solve your bullpen problems that way. You plug in a number two, and you know what? I feel pretty good about that pitching going into October.
So, Frank, yeah, listen, it's not an awful question. Okay, it's not an awful question. And look, without getting into all the luxury tax ramifications of it, what type of space they have, what they don't, what the trade market is in terms of who's available, what talent is out there, to me, I'll tell you that it's not a horrible idea. And earlier in the year when Price was pitching poorly, before the whole carpal tunnel syndrome thing, when Price was going bad, I thought they should have entertained it. But to me, the key guy is Price. It's all about Price. 100% about David Price. If David Price is pitching like he, and you say, well, we know he's not good in the postseason as a starter. True. Sale had a bad one too last year. You're going to cut the cord on him? We're going to just be done with Chris Sale in the playoffs? Now, it's only one start. Price has had a lot more. Price hasn't had not every start Price has made in the postseason has been bad. He had one in Kansas City in the year he was with Toronto. So that would have been what? This is his third year in Boston, so it would have been 2015. I think he had a shutout, like one hitter going into like the seventh inning. And then if you go back and watch the rally, now that he blew up, but if you go back and watch the rally, there were some C&I singles in there. He caught some bad breaks in the inning too. So if Price can get over that hump and Price can pitch like he's pitching now, you don't need it. That said, if in the next month they are faced with getting a legit starter or a so-so reliever, I think what you're throwing out there is not necessarily the wrong way to go. I mean, my point is I'd consider it as an option. Stick Price in the bullpen. But again, it comes down to Price and how Price pitches in terms of how do you deploy your personnel. But because to me, if Price is pitching well, you start him. You do. You start him. But if he's borderline, and he's going to be the third or fourth guy because Rodriguez outpitches him? Well, then you know what? Maybe you do get a starter, and maybe you stick Price in the bullpen, and you solve two needs there because you need an eighth inning guy too. OK, Okay, and that way you really deepen your staff in two ways. You end up with a better bullpen and a better rotation, if it comes to that. I don't eliminate it as a possibility. That said, I doubt they'll do it. I doubt they'll do it for lots of reasons. Because, again, the luxury tax implications, starters are going to cost more. Starters market's not great. You know, you see Jay Happ is being talked about as a candidate to maybe go to the Yankees. And New York's going to be able to pay more than you can for a good starter, which is a separate issue entirely.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of every